This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. One of the oldest African-American women's organizations is the Cincinnati Federation of Colored Women's Clubs. Established in 1904, the women supported their community by establishing daycares, feeding needy families, and awarding scholarships. Then in 1925, the founders purchased a 17-room home in Walnut Hills, built by Cincinnati architect Samuel Hannaford, known for Music Hall and City Hall. Today, the women's clubhouse on Chapel Street still stands, and now with volunteers from A Few Good Men, they're working to restore the historic home. Here to discuss the restoration effort and the historic importance of this women's organization are Cincinnati Federation of Colored Women's Clubs Exhibit Chair Joyce Cottrell, Ohio Association of Colored Women's Clubs First Vice President Johnny Houston, and A Few Good Men Project Coordinator Samuel Abubakar. Johnny, thank you for being here this afternoon.
You're
good
welcome.
To see you. And Joyce,
thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Samuel, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it. Joyce, tell us what originally gave rise, the predecessor group, the original group was the National Association of Colored Women. How did that get its start?
That started in, actually it started in 1896, but what started it all was in 1895, there was a letter that was written by James W. Jacks. What was happening at this point in time, there was a lot of lynching going on, and there was a journalist in England named Florence Balgarnie. And what she felt was it was important to contact the journalists in America to say, you know, this is not correct, because she belonged to an anti-lynching group. So she wrote this letter, and James W. Jacks, who was the Missouri Press Association president, he responded, and he responded in a negative way towards Negroes. And basically what he said was that Negroes in the countries are wholly devoid of morality, that they wear the badge of honor to go to jail, and that this is what really got the women, that women were nothing.
And he actually wrote this in the
newspaper?
He
wrote this letter back to Florence. And he also said that women were nothing but, black Negro women were nothing but liars and prostitutes. Well, she made sure, Florence made sure that that information was sent to Josephine St. Pierre Ruffin in Washington, D.C. And she was part of an organization. What she did was she was part of the National Association of Colored Women's Clubs at that had not started. What she did was she bought two clubs together and showed them this letter and said, look at this, basically.
Well, I bet a lot of women got there, were angry about
it
that.
It started a whole bunch of mess, basically. And it was good, because that was the time that the women got together, two groups, and they started the National Association of Colored Women's Clubs, and that started in July of 1896. And the whole purpose was to let society know that, no, the Negro, really women, and population, we had a lot of morality. We were people of substance. So what they decided to do was then they developed the program, the National Association Organization, and one of the first things that they started to do, education was very important to them. And they just started from that point on, and it just spearheaded, because then they started going throughout the other states through the United States, because once again, all that woman suffrage, everything was going on, and then all that negativity brought the women together. And then Negro women at that time just started developing different clubs and organizations throughout the states. And that's how the Cincinnati Federation came to be, because then in May 6th of 1904, it was the Miss Isaac N. Ross of Cincinnati. She was the wife of the bishop here at Allen Temple. And what she decided to do was, yes, there's a problem here. We need to develop an organization. And that's what she did. She bought eight clubs together in Cincinnati, and they started the Cincinnati Federation of Colored Women's Clubs, basically from the same thing that happened with the National Association, to prove to society that Negroes are people who have substance and we should be respected, basically. So I'm going to turn this over to Johnny and let her talk about the Cincinnati branch.
Yeah. Samuel wanted to throw something in here.
I think it's very important that we realize the time. From 1865 to 1896 is only a matter of 30-plus years. There was substance in us as a people then. Ex-slaves and children of ex-slaves were already in the fight for freedom, justice, and equality. That's a very powerful point, because you wonder, where did they get that? What was this going on? How were these women able to stand up against a society where the men were not still at that point, not allowed to? It's very interesting, because the forerunners of the fight for civil rights and equality in this country were really the women who stepped out there first. Less than 30 years after slavery, they was into the fight. That's important.
Now, Johnny, tell us about the Cincinnati Federation. What was that club like in its early days?
Well, the club in the early days, the women were determined to be supportive. And so, therefore, they got together and they ended up buying a clubhouse on 1010 Chapel Street. And to do that, they purchased shares of $15 each. Was able to pay that house off.
What was the original price on that house?
For some reason, I want to say it was $18,000.
It was
$18,000. Okay. That was a lot of money back then, because I think today that would be, Samuel, if I'm not mistaken, it's like $250,000 in today's dollars. Wow.
That's a lot of money.
That is.
But those ladies back in that day, they were able to definitely pay the house off. But before they got to that, the mortgage was liquidated in 1946, so they purchased the house in 1925. They were able to liquidate the mortgage in 1946. And then...
So they got it paid off in 21 years.
They did.
That's good.
And we can't do that now with our own personal property. That's for sure. But then they didn't stop. In 1979, they had a first renovation of the clubhouse. And that... That let us know that they were not just happy with where they were. And then in 1980, they purchased two adjacent lots that was connected. They were able to go out and purchase those lots and pay those off. And also in 1980, the 1010 Chapel Street was placed on our Federal Register for Historical Preservation in 1980, because you have to have the house a certain way before they pick it up. But in 1967, the organization established the Douglas School Tutoring and Clothes Program. And what they did was they went in to help the children who were less fortunate at home. They didn't have the support at home, so they went in to help those kids. Some of the kids needed clothing. They went and helped the children have clothing. They were happy to do that.
And Joyce had mentioned about they established the first kindergarten.
Right. That was one of the first endeavors of the Cincinnati Federation of Colored Women's Clubs. That daycare was taking place. It was held at the Brown Street Chapel on Alm Street. It's the church there. And what they did, because once again, the Cincinnati Federation believed that education was important. That was the key for you to be successful. So they believed in education, and they had that program there. The history states that the Cincinnati Public Schools saw how successful the children were when they came out of those programs, that they also decided, we're going to put kindergarten in our public schools. And that's played a real important role in Cincinnati's public schools, that program was started.
That bullet point is often lost. I've been around these women since 2015, and there's so much issues. You can't do it in a day or a week, and definitely not in 30 minutes. Some of the things that they did then, the foundation set for a lot of the things that's going on now. If a group of women can buy a house in 1925 and it's standing 118 years for the organization, but 92 years today, and we're doing triple and double mortgages, that's an awesome precedence. Nobody can say that. And there's a statement that's often not used. They are the oldest organization in America for African Americans. It's not the NAACP. 1904 versus the time when they was founded. And that's just always a little plug for the women.
Thank you.
It's good to have them on your side.
And I want to say one thing about when we talk about kindergarten. That was one of the reasons why I was became really active into the organization. Probably about late 80s, early 90s, I was approached by one of the clubs, and they had asked a committee of some people that I work with to do a fashion show as a fundraiser for them based on the history of their organization. And we didn't know the history of the organization, so we read it. And at the time, the group that I was working with, they were educators. And they were saying, well, you know, I work for the public school system, but I never knew that the Federation had something to do with kindergarten. So as we read that history and we're saying, oh my gosh, this is so rich, we definitely wanted to be involved. And that's how I became active with the Cincinnati Federation. So that was, to me, was important, because that history just struck my heart that this is something that we were never taught No one ever said anything about it. I never heard of it before until I really read the history and became active with the organization.
Johnny, how many members in its early days, how many members did the Federation have in Cincinnati?
They had several hundred. I'm not sure about the exact number, but we had several hundred members. When you look at all the pictures that we have at the clubhouse and you see all of these people, in fact, across this national, we just was a huge organization in the early days.
At one point, I'm going to jump in because I've been doing my paperwork. I mean,
you've been doing your homework.
My homework, yeah. There were 60 groups at one time in Cincinnati, 60 Federation clubs. And one of the things about the club that I find so unique is that you could join the club if you have a particular issue that you was looking at. If you're doing sewing, if you did pot knitting, whatever. So the clubs were unique in as much as you didn't have to come in and get in when you fit in. You could come in and bring a group to the table, which made them extremely strong. Today's organization is not built like that. You come in and you join over here, you join over there. That's what made those women quite strong, because they didn't make a bring what they wanted to bring. They brought what they had, and they was able to participate in the community in the area that they was most proficient.
And the other thing, let me just talk about when you're talking about how many women. One of the things about the Cincinnati Federation, they always kept a historical book, and there's a book that they have from September 1952 up to June of 1962, I think this book is. And at that point in time, they had 36 clubs. Each club had to have a minimum of 10 people. Okay, so that lets you know there was at least about 360 women at that point in time active in the Federation in those early days. Okay, so it has grown over since, you know, and they had at one point in time, we talk about the district, at one point there was like 750 members in the district, because we're in part of the Southwest District. That's where we are. And John can talk about that.
Johnny, okay, I'm curious too. Go ahead and tell us about the Southwest District.
Okay, Southwest District is the layer up. When you go up, you start with Cincinnati. We are the only city now that's left with this Federation. We're the only city. We have the only house, and that's tremendous to me. But the district, years ago, and it still does, it encompasses Dayton, Xenia, all our outlying areas. And they still, the district will do that all the way up to Columbus. So the Southwest District will have all of these cities up under them.
Johnny, how did somebody become a member in the club's early days?
In the early days, you just could not join the club. You had to be recommended. They had to write a letter. And in a sense, they had certain, I hate to say it this way, but certain kind of people had the right mind to be supportive to the community. You just couldn't decide, I want to join that club. And they had to write a letter of recommendation. In fact, when I joined years ago, I had to have a letter of recommendation. I was asked, and then a letter was written for me to become a member. And then they submitted that letter to the group. And the group would read the letter and decide, and they would even call you in and interview you, ask you questions before they would consider that you could be a member.
Was your first ballot?
So it was a pretty exclusive group. I mean, is it still that way today as far as becoming a member?
No, we don't do it like that. If you're interested in joining the Federation, all you have to do is go to a club, and the club will invite you to join. They don't have to write a letter. It's not like that anymore.
Not as complicated as it used to be.
Mm-mm.
And, you know, when you're talking about the letters, as we were putting together the history for the exhibit at the library, we came across some of those letters. And it was funny because we would read them, and they were saying, oh, I was welcomed into the Federation. And I laughed. I said, well, I didn't even realize that this was really how it happened. So it was nice to see. So we'll be able to share that information once we do the exhibit, because we're going to do some exhibits at our clubhouse. So people will be able to see
and
that information.
And learn more about the history of the
group.
Right.
It's going to be really exciting.
So Samuel, let you get your talk about a few good men. What is your, it's your turn. What's your organization about? How did it become involved with the Federation?
A Few Good Men was founded by Curtis Fuller, Everett Cork, Robert Humphreys, and C. Smith. And they were just four men who began to eat breakfast. And it started out at Miss Jenny Lassiter. Dr. Lassiter gave them the name A Few Good Men. They expanded by going over to Rashida's, over to African American restaurant. We grew too big for that, and I came on board shortly afterwards, and then we grew to Frisch's, and it kept expanding, you know. From four men, we up to about 60 men on the roads. And we were at Frisch's, and I had become familiar with the Federation, and I decided that we could go up and do some things. So the idea came, and then they say, let's go. So now, every Tuesday, beginning at 10:30, we have breakfast, and we take those funds that was given to Frisch's, and we give them to the Cincinnati Federation of Colored Women's Clubs. Our initial act was to go up and do the floor. But once we got there, we couldn't do the floor without doing the ceiling. We couldn't do the ceiling without doing the walls. So we've been there spending in the tune of about $7,000 in the last 14 months. Consistently has been the real thing. We came in June, and we're still here in January.
Joyce or Johnny, tell us about the clubhouse, whichever one of you feels most comfortable doing that. Kind of describe this to us.
Well, I'll start off and I'll let Joyce help us out.
Okay, Johnny.
The clubhouse has about 14 rooms, and we have several fireplaces. We have three floors. The main floor we use for our club meetings, and upstairs we use for our offices. But years ago, that clubhouse was used for people to stay in that didn't have places to stay. They needed somewhere to stay. And we opened the clubhouse, was open up for persons to come in, and we were able to help those persons get on their feet. So that's what we do. But now, basically, it is used for our meetings and events.
Okay. When we're talking about the use for people to stay there, it was for women and children that migrated from the South. They needed a place to stay. So the Federation was there, and they would let them stay there until they were able to find a residence. But that was the whole purpose. We felt like we needed to help our sisters that are coming from the South, and they needed a place to stay. And then that was why also that they provided that daycare and that kindergarten was started, because those women had to go out and work. Someone needed to take care of their kids. They may not have family there, so they said, we need to be able to take care of their children and provide them daycare, and it was free daycare.
And this is a historic house, isn't it? It's on a, mm-hmm. it's on the registry?
Yes, it was on the register.
It was on the register. Now, I think I'm not sure if it's still on there.
I'm not either. I know it was, we had to redo the
roof
on the house. And no, we did not put back it just slate. The way the slate, yes. Mm-hmm. And that's something that the Few Good Men are saying they want to put it back with the slate on it. And I just thought that was marvelous that's their goal.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And let's talk to Margaret. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. How are you this afternoon?
Good, thank you.
I'm thankful that this program is entertaining the Federation of Colored Women. My mother is Louise Cromwell, whose picture hangs in 1010 Chapel.
Yes.
And I remember being a little girl going to the meetings and the fashion shows and the teas and all of those things. The contribution that organization has given to the city is unbelievable. I would like to have more information on joining. I'm in my 60s now, and matter of fact, the fact that they rent the place for different events is also wonderful. My husband's cousin's family had a repast there. It was very nice. It brought back memories. I have six sons. All of them were able to see their grandmother's picture hanging up in that place.
Wonderful.
She was the president at one time of the Cincinnati chapter. And as I said, it would be nice to have more women join and be a part. And I would like to know how I can join and do my part in contributing.
Margaret, thank you for the call.
Okay, she could just call in at 888-823-2922. Let me repeat it. It's 888-823-2922. And someone will get right back with you.
Okay.
And Margaret, this is Joyce Cottrell. I knew your mother. I loved your mother. We used to have big fun. Mm. She was a sweetheart. I remember her service.
What year was she?
I remember going to her funeral. And I just, You know, she was just always a delight to be around. And, you know, I'm glad to hear that you want to follow in her footsteps because we need you, and I know she would be proud.
And Sammy had a good question. What year was Lois the president? What years was she president? Do you have that?
Yeah.
Yes. She was president on November 71 through 1982. I'm going to say 82. You're saying Cromwell.
It was 2070.
Oh, yes, 1994 to 1996.
Yes.
1994 through 1996, Lois Cromwell was president.
Mm-hmm.
So, Margaret, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. What about outreach to younger generations? Is your group working with teenagers, young women? And Samuel, same question for you. A Few Good Men, do you have an outreach going on for younger people?
It was restoration and renovation, to restore the spirit of the house and of those women and to renovate the physical structure itself. We are no different than another group of African-American men to see the need in the community. We have an aging populace that's a part of A Few Good Men, but we have some younger men who are coming on board. Outside, we do go to Frederick Douglass to provide fruit and water every Thursday for their mentoring program. We've gone to Dawn High School and hired some of the young gentlemen at Dawn that's over on East McMillan to actually go out and work with me in particular as a landscaper. So in our own individual ways, we're making an impact.
Yeah, Joyce, what about you with your organization?
Well, with our organization, we are looking to start a youth program. The Southwest District is really the one that spearheads the youth program. This year, we had a youth group probably about 2 years ago. It seemed like everyone graduated. Okay, so now we're looking at that again. We are in touch with the Douglass School. Douglass School over in Walnut Hills, and also Evanston Academy. So we do a lot with the youth there. And so that's one of the things that we are working with them, trying to get those students as part of our organization. Because we do a lot of, for the young people, we do etiquette classes, teas, and we provide like those kind of services and those kind of classes for them. The coordinators that have the outreach coordinators at those two public schools, they like that, be able to provide that type of service to the students because they don't really get that. And so they like to teach them the etiquette and how they can do certain things as far as social things that they don't get the opportunity to do. Because when we do the etiquette classes, we have the young ladies wear hats. And they're just, you should just see their personalities change when they put on a hat. So that's one of the things we enjoy to watch them.
How much impact do you feel like your group is having in the community?
Mm-hmm. I believe that we are having an impact when we, those things that we do for them. You know, like when you provide hygiene bags, we do hygiene bags for those two schools. Hygiene bags are where we provide soap, washcloths, combs, toothpaste, deodorant. You'd be surprised how many young people don't have that at home. So when they get that, that's important. They also, one of the clubs provide what they call weekend packs where they give them food to take home for the weekend. So that's important because, and the children remember that those groups provided me food. They provided me things that I needed. We used to provide them with uniforms. Those kind of things stick with young people. So I have been out in the community and someone said, hey, you did our graduation from Douglass School and I really remember that. We had a good time. And I really appreciate that. So when you get that kind of feedback, you know you've made a difference. We've made a difference in that child's life.
And one of the things I do want to say, and then I'll turn it over to Sam, we gave out a scholarship years ago, and one of the persons got, I believe, our first scholarship was part of the Few Good Men. Mm-hmm. And he shared that with the Few Good Men, and it's just exciting to hear how he's very successful today, mm-hmm. but he's appreciative that we gave him a scholarship. And I'm going to let Sam tell us the name in a minute. But the other thing that I thought was interesting, how years ago that we would give him money every month to help him out. Sam.
His name is John Hassell. He's a historian and he's an author, president of the Bankers Association, African Americans Across America. He's well-traveled. He got an award and a scholarship in 1959. Also, Kenneth Parker, Assistant U.S. Attorney General for Southwestern Ohio, whose mother is a member, he received a scholarship in 1991 to Tuskegee. Also in 1959, Rabbi McNeil for the International Rabbi Group is also one of the recipients of Cincinnati Federation of Colored Women's Club.
Well, Johnny, Joyce, and Samuel, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Cincinnati Federation of Colored Women's Clubs Exhibit Chair Joyce Cottrell, Ohio Association of Colored Women's Clubs First Vice President Johnny Houston, and A Few Good Men Project Coordinator Samuel Abubakar. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition. The producer was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Selena Reeder. Josh Elstro was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney.